You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
By the way, this is not shade to anyone on the planet, because I haven't listened to any voice other than mine for the last 24 hours and arguably 23 years. But if you start any Chiefs conversation today, I don't care if it's a radio show or a podcast or a conversation with your friends. If you start any conversation about the Chiefs today with, man, I don't know about that defense, you have to go.
With Joshua Briscoe.
You have to launch yourself into another hemisphere. You have to jump on Patrick Mahomes' hand and let him fling you to the sun, which he can do.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I really enjoy the liners of the early days of Patrick Mahomes. The defense was bad. The offense was magical. He was throwing footballs to the moon. What a time it was. Which
remember
does
that Rams game?
I sure do.
Oh boy, that was a game.
I sure do. It's like remembering
been a lot better if they won that game, but that was still like that was a fun game.
Honestly, at this point, the result does nothing for me.
Yeah,
I just remember it like it was the first time that we all collectively did crack together.
Remember when Jared Goff was elite? He had his moment.
I think twice you've kindly nudged me away from talking about hard drugs for comedic value again. Which also reminds me of the old days when he was being Kansas City. At one point, we had a tracker for how many days in a row we joked about cocaine. I don't know how that happened or why that happened or why that... It just did, you know? Not everything can be explained. Some things just happen. I also don't know. I'm going to go back to the Chiefs defense thing as instead of the more recent thing that I just said as a joke, as I introduce the one and only Craig Stout. You can follow him on Twitter at BarleyHop. You can, of course, read his work all across, read and hear and watch his work all across KC Sports Network. There's the Substack at kcsn.substack.com, and then the KC Sports Network YouTube has all of the videos, including the KC Laboratory podcast with Craig and Kent and Matt Lane. I think that's the majority of the things. Every time I plug KCSN now, Craig, I do have PTSD from the time that I broke the news that you guys were going to start selling t-shirts, and so I start getting skittish around my, like, third item.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what happens when you leave me in with my required cocaine introduction. that I had you guys go ahead and do every time that I come on now, so I really appreciate that you led with that. So, yeah, really, really good start so far.
Yeah, it really is, and it sounds like your phone might be on crack also, so that might be an even better... No, it's perfect, man. It's perfect that a phone connection and terrestrial radio has not been able to solve a problem fixed by Zoom, but we haven't. I'm going to put Craig on hold really quick. Rudy, you want to call him back and try a little reconnect there? It just got kind of crunchy and warbly, and I figured that, you know, the play might be... I'll let you handle it. He's still on hold, I think. The play might be to just go ahead and try to solve that before it ends up being an issue in the middle of this. Here's the real gem of this is it will give us a fresh start on talking to Craig about literally anything else. You know, we've really gotten into a bad habit, and I say we and mean I, but I've gotten into a bad habit lately. I think of bringing people in at difficult entry levels. You know what I mean? We make Jordan wait 5 minutes before he's allowed to speak. Craig just got a cocaine joke intro. That's not fair. And so by the time that we are now reconnected as we are, it's win-win because Craig gets a better introduction and we probably end up with a better connection there. Let's find out, Craig. Here, hold on. New intro. Craig Stout of KC Sports Network. You already know where all those places are because I just said them. And this intro has nothing to do with any jokes about drugs. Damn it!
See?
Did it again.
Okay. Listen. I know it's hard. I know every time you think about me, your mind immediately goes to hard drugs.
Yeah.
Like, that's obviously the easiest way to go. You know, you think of this guy... You know, typically comes on your show and sings R&B songs to you for no good reason whatsoever, talks about the Chiefs defense. Like, my mind immediately goes to, you know, amphetamines of some kind. So I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I do, but I appreciate feeling understood. That's a nice feeling, even if it's filled with, you know, a bunch of well-intentioned lies. I've said this multiple times already, Craig, and like to the point that I'm just hoping that someone will eventually be able to give me an answer that makes me feel like it's playoff time. But last week was weird because it was a weird finale. Like, it was week 18, it was against the Broncos, it kind of mattered, but maybe didn't, it was on a Saturday, and the Chiefs seemed kind of sleepy. Well, now we're here in the wild card round, an unfamiliar place for Patrick Mahomes to be, and they're getting ready to face a team that they just beat the brakes off of, like, 3 weeks ago. So, tell me how I'm supposed to feel right now.
I think you're supposed to feel confident. Ben Roethlisberger told you to feel confident, so I think that you should definitely feel confident. No, it's weird. It's really weird. The whole week 18 element of it is tough, whether it's, you know, to the forefront of your consciousness or not. Like, it's in my subconscious for sure. It's like, no, we're supposed to be the playoffs now. Like, this is playoff time, and it's not yet. So that whole thing, the Chiefs kind of sleepwalking through that game a little bit against a team that had nothing to play for, and realistically, the Chiefs didn't have a ton to play for either. So it was rough. You were trying to get out without any injuries, and now, yeah, you get the Steelers. Like, if this was the Chargers, man, the conversation this week would be completely different. Like, it would be, let's light this thing on fire. Here comes the playoffs. We're ready to go. Now it just kind of feels like, and this is from a fan perspective, not the player perspective, certainly, but from a fan perspective, it's like, man, like, let's just get through this one. Don't get hurt. And go on to the next game. And that may not be fair to the Steelers, but my goodness, this team just put a shellacking on them 3 weeks ago without Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. So I can't see it going a whole lot of other ways.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I think that all of that is also earned. Like, and you're right. This is not – the conversation we're having is not the exact same one going on within the confines of Arrowhead right now. There might be a conversation about, hey, don't you be sleepwalking through this because there's no margin for error here. You lose the grip on this game and it's all over. But out on the outside, what we think about the game isn't going to actually influence how it goes. I just can't help but think that this is a matchup between a really good football team and a not very good football team. Could you build any sort of argument to the contrary right now?
Sure. Sure, I could try and build an argument to the contrary. T.J. Watt is a game-changing player. Absolutely is. Arguably the defensive player of the year. I certainly would vote him as such. I think he has the chance to take over this game. I think he has the potential to wreck the Chiefs' offense almost single-handedly, like we've seen some teams do in the past. I think if we go back to the Super Bowl against the 49ers, you saw a guy like Nick Bosa almost single-handedly wreck the Chiefs' offense for three quarters. That's not to say that that's exactly going to happen with T.J. Watt, but he could. Minkah Fitzpatrick is a game-changing player in that secondary. Cameron Hayward is a very, very good player as well. So that defense is good. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they are going to run a lot of heavy personnel. They're going to run a lot of – it depends on if Najee Harris is actually healthy or not, but if he is – healthy enough to play, they're going to run him and feed him the ball a lot, and they're going to throw to these big-bodied receivers on the outside. These are things that we've seen the Chiefs defense struggle with. So it's not unheard of to think that this could be a game, to think that the Steelers could give the Chiefs their best chance. But honestly, I just the Chiefs are going to have to do a lot of things wrong and repeatedly wrong, I think, for it realistically to be something that's not going to be, you know, a two-score game at least.
Yeah, I think that, and maybe this is a weird doubt that I don't know if it's based on years of Chiefs play or if it really is based off of really just a few weeks from the beginning of this season. But like, I definitely would not count myself amongst anybody thinking the Chiefs are infallible right now. In fact, I have found myself more on the other side of being like, hey, everybody, just I do want you to remember that the Chiefs have lost some games this year, But I think that the games that stick with me, and it can be the Bengals game where there was a lot going on from, you know, all three teams, it back to some of the games earlier in the year, sneaky, right, they made the self-inflicted wounds and the mistakes and all of that that we've all talked about a million times, but they went up against good enough teams to exploit those mistakes, And I think, like, to be honest, I mean, I think that they could get away with a few against Pittsburgh, which is sort of putting that weird film over how I feel about this game. Good teams, I think, can absolutely catch the Chiefs if they are making these mistakes that we've seen them do consistently this year. I just don't think right now I'm that convinced that the Steelers are in almost any form capable of doing much with it. I guess it changes if it's a fumbled punt or something, right? But, like, for the most part, I just don't – I don't know that the Steelers would be able to deliver a punishment for those sort of mistakes.
I mean, you think about the things that have killed the Chiefs, driving down the field, getting into the red zone repeatedly at the beginning of the year, and Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball off of one of his receivers' hands for an interception. Do you believe that Ben Roethlisberger and this Steelers offense are then going to take the ball from the 16-yard line and drive the length of the field for a touchdown?
I do.
I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I just watched this happen, and oh, by the way, the guy that their entire offense runs through, Najee Harris, hasn't practiced yet this week because of an elbow injury that looked really bad when it happened. I mean, we'll see how this works out, but they don't have the same juice that some of those teams that really did kind of put the fear of God in the Chiefs early on in the season as they made those mistakes. That's just not the same sort of scenario that we are going to see. Ben Roethlisberger and this Steelers offense are definitely going to pull out all the stops. We're going to be seeing lots of tendency breakers, trick plays, things like that. But, oh, wait, they tried those against the Chiefs 3 weeks ago, and they resulted in turnovers. Like, they have tried a lot of this stuff, and it still didn't work. So, yeah, as I see this, it's like, yes, the margin for error is greater. And Las Vegas believes as well. I mean, it's a 12.5-point line. I mean, that's unheard of in the playoffs. So you don't get games like this very often in the opening round of the playoffs. Chiefs really did luck out in playing a team that, frankly, they match up better for than a lot of other teams in the playoffs, and that's even before we start talking about the quality of the players, which just doesn't hold the same candle as it does to the Kansas City Chiefs.
So you've written about the defense more broadly, and obviously if any of this becomes specifically relevant to the Steelers, I'd love to hear the connection, but some of this stuff is a little more broad about the rest of the playoffs, and you have this two-part piece up on KCSN right now, up on the Substack, kcsn.substack.com, looking at the Chiefs' defenses, some make-or-break sort of things, and one of the things you've looked at is a guy that has become a star of this week in the conversations because he's about to play his third revenge game in 5 weeks, I think, with the Chargers, Steelers, and the Steelers again. Melvin Ingram has made this defense better. Tell me how, though.
I mean, the way that he's made it better, Travis Kelce said they called him the juice man. He just brings that little extra explosion. He makes that extra play, that extra impact player along the Chiefs' defensive line. Melvin Ingram has an almost 10% pressure rate since he's arrived in Kansas City. That is good for third on the team this year. And he's done it in, you know, just this handful of weeks, the back half of the season. That has forced offenses to have to pay attention to him. When you've got that third guy over there, you can't just say, okay, we're going to double Chris Jones in the interior. We're going to send the running back out towards Frank Clark to chip him. And guess what? Now we've got all day to do whatever we want. Melvin Ingram is crushing the pocket. He's getting pressure. He's forcing throws out. Oh, and by the way, he's also the best run defender that the Chiefs have at defensive end right now, which I never thought I'd say. Frank Clark is an awesome run defender. Mm-hmm. Melvin Ingram's been even better this season. So he has completely changed, and not just for the obvious thing of, hey, we're moving Chris Jones back inside. Steve Spagnuolo talked about they were already doing that. Mm-hmm. They were starting to do that in week 7 before Melvin Ingram got there. But this has made it easier for them to win on the outside still while Chris Jones is on the inside. It's just completely – it's added that extra element, that extra playmakers. We saw this past week, and he made three just incredible plays in that game, and the one that everybody's going to remember, he did it earlier in the game. Yeah. Like a quarter before it, he had an exact same play. It was almost the exact same, just didn't force a fumble. You just see that happen often enough, that extra little juice, that extra little impact. It just makes so much of a difference on a defense that relies on these negative plays to get into those passing downs. And Steve Spagnuolo can get into his coverages and get into his blitz schemes and everything like that. Like, that's where Melvin Ingram has made the biggest difference, winning on those early downs and just allowing the Chiefs to not have an easy way to beat their defensive line right now.
I don't know how much of this you think is directly correlated. I mean, I know a little bit because of the story, but I'm doing the radio show. I don't know how much of this you would like to tell us is correlated to Melvin Ingram's arrival, and how much of it is health and where this team is at talent wise and everything. But I love the stat line of since Melvin Ingram's arrival in week 9, the Chiefs have 5 defensive linemen with a 10% or better pressure rate. You mentioned that Ingram is just above that mark. Chris Jones is way over it. Frank Clark's well over it. Alex Okafor, Tershawn Wharton there as well. Also making the note that they only had 3 players over that line last year, being Jones and Clark and Taco Charlton, and he came on a small sample size there. But with that unit as a whole, I mean, what are you seeing? Make that week 9 cut off the difference there. What is playing into that, and how sustainable is it going to be for the next maybe several weeks?
I mean, I do think that it is sustainable. Now, obviously, those guys that we're talking about on the front line, you know, Frank Clark, Chris Jones, Melvin Ingram, those 3 guys are going to get the bulk of the rest. But it meant that because guys like Frank Clark and Melvin Ingram played with so much power, I mean, you see how often they're able to get into the chest of the offensive tackle. They're able to collapse the pocket. They beat up these offensive linemen. They really do. Chris Jones does as well. Not trying to absolve them, but then all of a sudden, you get the second line in there. You get Alex Okafor, Mike Dana, Turk Wharton, you know, Derek Nottie even a little bit on the interior as he's rushing the passer. And those guys now get these guys that are tired, they're worn out, and they're able to feast in some of these obvious passing situations. Mm-hmm. Alex Okafor is a technician. He is really good with his hands. And when you come across the tackle, then he's now playing a little slower because he's tired and he's sore and he's beat up. Alex Okafor can come in and win just that little half second earlier to get that pressure, to get that sack. Turk Wharton wins in similar ways to Chris Jones. He's just a smaller guy. He's not quite as powerful. He's not quite as physical, but he is slippery. And so when you've got these guys on the interior that are a little more beat up, a little more tired from having to cover Chris Jones for as long as they are, now you insert Turk Wharton. So it really has had this cascading effect, but it's because there's a lot more one-on-ones with Melvin Ingram out there. That week 9 cutoff does matter because you're seeing more one-on-ones. You're seeing more guys that are having to take on the brunt of stopping Frank Clark, Jaron Reed, Chris Jones, and Melvin Ingram on that front line. When they get to that second tier, those guys now all of a sudden can come in, find a little more success, be able to impose their will a little more, and just, you know, improves the rotation because then those guys get to come out and it's a cascading thing that happens because that third guy is there that you just have to pay attention to.
I don't want to just go down bullet points your list and make you do an audiobook for everybody now. People can go read it again at kcsn.substack.com. But the last takeaway in part 1 I think is super interesting, but it does build off of the 2 things prior to it. You talk about this team and their base packages, and then also how good they've been in a not-so-positive way, and then how good they are in obvious passing downs. But what that ultimately means for them not being very successful in early down situations, I think this is super interesting. Put into context what that problem looks like and why you think that has either come together or, as you kind of get to here, like why it is disconcerting that that has been a point of concern.
I mean, the Chiefs have allowed 6.3 yards per play on first down in the 2021 season. That's an average of 6.3. That means the opposition is already in an and short situation on second down on average. That's problematic. Mm-hmm. That is a full yard more than any Spagnuolo year. Oh, and by the way, they're allowing 6.1 on second down as well. So those first 2 downs, they're regularly allowing first down conversions. Yeah. This team
it's just bad, man. It's just so bad.
It's so bad. They don't get to third down very often. And when they are in third down, guess what? They're one of the league's best teams. They are in the top 10 in third down conversion rate on defense because of what they're able to do in those situations, even when it is a short situation. Now, a lot of times offenses go for it on fourth down against the Chiefs. That's a different argument here. But the way that this Chiefs defense plays on first and second downs, they just give up so much, and that happens partially because of their base defense, where these linebackers have been repeatedly targeted in the pass game, and they're also not stopping the run particularly well. It's a little bit surprising. They run blitz really well, but if they don't run blitz, a lot of times it's 4 or 5 yard gains. It's down the field a little bit more. And so offenses are able to kind of force more of this run-pass conflict on second down. That's why it's so large. And sometimes on third down, when they're in these third and two, third and three situations, that's not where Spagnuolo's at his best. That's not what this team is built upon. Spagnuolo's scheme is one of these situations where you want him in third and long. He can throw whatever coverage it is that he knows that that quarterback is going to be uncomfortable with seeing. He's really good in those situations. And so he can take advantage of tendencies. He can take advantage of, you know, protection tendencies. He can get pressure a lot more often on third down. It's just not happening regularly. And I think here's the part that you want me to say here. The scary part is this team is built to win on early down.
Yeah.
They've got these bigger players, you know, these bigger and slower linebackers. That's not trying to make anybody feel bad, but that's the type of player that they've gone after. These bigger, slower defensive linemen as well. Those are the guys that they put on the field in those, you know, first and second down situations, and they're just exploited a little too easily this season. They're not able to come up with the stops that they need, and it just gets them in into situations where they don't see third downs for, you know, long stretches of the game, and that's where they're at their best.
This is, we'll have what will feel like years to talk about draft stuff with you, because those are some long months. Probably less for you guys, because you work really hard during it. Around here, it's just like, please, just a crumb of anything football. But, so, you know, we don't have to do that just yet. But is there a long-term solution to that that you would look at? Because I do think it's fascinating. And look, I mean, like, Nick Bolton has played some really good football this year. He's made the Chiefs defense
really
better.
Really good. Yes.
And I am saying that as someone who, when that draft pick came in, was shocked and not thrilled because they drafted a linebacker in the second round 2 years in a row. They're different linebackers and all that, you know, all of the caveats, right? But it has been a little bit strange to see some of the places where they have invested, and then for this, at least this year, to kind of be the predominant result. And, you know, like, I don't think Anthony Hitchens is probably here next year and all of that, but do you think that there is something the Chiefs will do, see that and do differently? Because this doesn't seem like one of those places where you accept you're going to be not very good at one part of the game, to your point of they've kind of built to be better at this than they have been. And that seems like a really unique problem to solve.
It really does. And some of that is going to be tendencies. You know, if you've got guys out there on the second level that maybe don't have the same athleticism, like Willie Gay's missed time this season. Mm-hmm. If you don't have Willie Gay out there, you don't have a ton of athleticism at the second level. It's just the way that this team is built, and offenses have taken advantage of that by throwing at those guys, and it's worked. You've also seen this defense not tackle particularly well on first down. So even when they are in situations to make plays, they don't come up with those stops. The tackling thing is just one of those that's always going to be, you know, kind of a looming cloud, you know, as they reduce practice time and all that. So there's only so much you can do with that. But the rest of it is, you know, finding guys that can be a little more versatile, that can play three downs rather than having these one and two down guys that you're investing so much in to try and do that. And then the guys that can play on three downs, trusting them to play on all three downs. I think we look at a guy like Willie Gay Jr. and we say we want him on the field more because he just has that extra juice. He's got that extra athleticism. He can cover. He can play the run. Let's play him on all three downs. And they don't. So, I mean, it's one of those where you've got to – and maybe those guys need to earn that rep, you know, earn that time, whatever the case may be. But you've got to get more development out of the guys that can play on all three downs, can be that versatile, because offenses are always going to find that little crack, that ability to get the knife in there and split open the defense. You've got to find ways to try and close that back up in a hurry. And if you've got such big tendencies that can't be solved by scheme and you're having to rely on personnel that maybe can't do some of the things you want them to do, there's always going to be that crack, and you're going to see situations like a season-long average of 6 yards per play on first and second downs. That's just something that Steve Spagnuolo certainly does not want this season, and I'm sure he's going to try and figure out ways to stop that next season.
It was such a good little visual there of what I think, one of the many things that makes football so much fun. Like, and also, I think why, I'll make this another extended plug for the KCSN Substack and all the work you guys do, understanding this sport better makes it more fun, I think, because you start seeing, it's not just run ball here, throw ball here, it's grunt.
I mean, sometimes it is that.
And it still is that. No, that's always a part of it. That part never really goes away, which also rules. But then there is the, hey, you know, if you give anything to an offense, they're going to work all week to exploit that. And then if you can take that away again, you get the upper hand. But then they'll find out what opens up because of that. I love that, and you guys do a great job of making parts of the game like that more clear over at KCSN. If you want to read about the blitz and why the Chiefs have been so successful with it and why what Spags does with it, that's in part two up on the Substack. If you want to read about something that I've been terrified of now for a little while, we've seen bite the Chiefs significantly about the vertical shots down the boundary. That is also in part two of this story up in the Substack. But if I give the little lean towards those and push you towards the verdict right now, Craig, with a full regular season behind you and a full playoff in front of you, is the Chiefs defense good?
Yes, I do think the Chiefs defense is good. And I think that it starts with the defensive line playing at a much higher level than we've seen them play in the Steve Spagnuolo era. And that's what he needs to make this go. And I know I just got done talking about how first downs and they're not staying ahead of the sticks and things like that. It has gotten better with Melvin Ingram. That average has come down a little bit. They've also gotten to third downs a lot more regularly, and they've also used the blitz incredibly well this season. I will wait for you to stop laughing about 3rd and 27. Just go ahead. Just do it. Do it. Yep,
I did a little chuckle. You got me. You did.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I know that everybody's going to hang on that, and that's fine. It's warranted. It's everything like that. But by and large, this season, the blitz has been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And the 4-man rush has been phenomenal. And the corners, even though we're worried about the vertical shot, Charvarius Ward and Rashad Fenton are having the best years of their career on the outside. When they were playing well there in the middle of the season, they were shutting down Devontae Adams. They were shutting down, you know, CeeDee Lamb. We were seeing them go up against truly elite receivers and eliminating them. Now, whatever was happening the rest of the game, that doesn't matter. They were blanketing those guys. That's great. They can return to that. And if they return to that, if we don't see essentially what we saw against the Bengals, which is everybody's going to point to, if we don't see what we saw against the Bengals again, this defense is so good at finding ways, creative ways, to break tendencies and stop the offense. That's what Steve Spagnuolo does best. I think that's what he'll continue to do throughout these playoffs. I am excited to see rematches. I want to see the Bills again. I want to see the Titans again. I want to see the Bengals again. I want to see whoever it is in the future here. I want to see these teams again because I truly believe he has learned from the mistakes. He has learned from those teams. And I think he's going to stop them. We've seen that happen over the past 3 years. I think we'll see it happen again.
Last thing for you, Craig, is that one thing that I do have a little bit of an inkling of is just that it whenever the Chiefs see quarterbacks who are very comfortable breaking the pocket, moving on the ground, kind of making some damage in places where maybe it's not designed to be, that feels like it could be, you know, a challenge to any offense. And I'm just excited to hear how you think Big Ben's going to do that to him this weekend.
Hang on, I just have a question.
Sure.
Who is carrying the sled that is moving Ben around the pocket?
It's
which,
like,
offensive linemen are they designating to move him out of the pocket via sled?
It's like the Grinch, where like you have this huge bag full of presents being dragged along by like a little puppy with one horn on his head.
I know.
Somebody there can be Max. That's...
Yes. You know, and see, all of this could be avoided. We could have been having a much more significant conversation about an opponent that we all wanted to see that was going to be a true barometer if there just would have been a tie this past weekend, people. One tie. I asked for. One tie.
Just
one tie.
How many times have we seen a kicker shank a kick in a big moment? That would have been a totally stress-free place to shank a kick. You're still in the playoffs.
Perfect. Guess what?
You still celebrate.
Guess what? All those Steelers fans donated to his, you know, foundations and stuff like that. Guess who's going to be donating to those foundations? Chargers fans, all one of them. They would donate so much money to Daniel Carlson Foundation. It is unbelievable.
Such a tragic missed opportunity. Craig, I appreciate it as always. Thank you for making the time, and good luck keeping up with Big Ben this weekend. I know you're going to have to really work out those clicker muscles.
I'll get out my walker, guys. I'll get out my walker and try and keep up.
See you, Craig. It's Craig Stout of KC Sports Network. You can follow him on Twitter at BarleyHop. And you can, of course, read all that work. Again, and all of his pieces that we just talked about right now. There's so much more that we are not able to get to in a radio segment. And also stuff like stats that don't always transfer. They do great video work. You can't get all that through the on-air side. So go check it out at kcsn.substack.com. Or if you want the homepage for everything KC Sports Network, kcsportsnetwork.com is the place to go. And, you know, I just wonder if somewhere right now in Pittsburgh, if Big Ben's just, you know, on a not even a reclining bike, one like an Airdyne, you know, that where the handles also move and you've got the big fan in the front for some reason. I think that's what Big Ben's doing for cardio right now.
I assume you watched the Monday night game. That last year, the game against the Browns. Or was it Monday night?
Yeah, whatever. But it was his last. It was going to be his last home game.
Basically, he threw like 55 passes or whatever it is. That's my dream scenario for this game.
55 passes for 56 yards, essentially?
I just want to see Big Ben be like, you know what? This is it. I'm throwing 60 passes. Like, I'm just going to sling it. Now, it was, like, kind of frustrating to, like, see him drop back and sling it out and never throw the ball more than, like, 3 yards down the field.
But the stat.
It's so bad.
The stat is going to sound made up.
I know. It's like. I want to guess. I want to see if I can remember.
Do you want me to tell you how many attempts? You want to guess the whole stat line?
Let me do.
Okay, guess the whole stat line.
I think he was like roughly, I want to say 26 for 53, 120. Was it 123 yards? I think at one time he had 100. I'm going to bump it up to like 131.
24 completions. I think you said 26.
I said 26, yeah.
With 46 attempts.
Oh,
yeah, like 50.
He was 53. I thought he was in the 50s.
He was more efficient than that for 123 yards.
You
had it.
I remember seeing the box score, like watching the game, that he was at 123 because I was like, oh, it's 1-2-3. I just thought maybe that was like, oh, he completed another pass.
Baker Mayfield in that game had a QBR of 16 out of 100. Ben Roethlisberger had a QBR of 13.2.
They set a season high for most incompletions in a football game between Baker and Roethlisberger.
Is that true?
Yes.
That's very funny.
I was following a Twitter account that was tracking this, which was lovely. The most incompletions in a game in NFL history was the Giants versus, I believe, Washington. Because it was Eli Manning
versus pick a Washington quarterback.
I would believe you.
You could say any name.
I probably could. Honestly, I think I could figure it out because it happened. It was in 2007. It was when the Giants played Washington in 2007 because Eli had a ridiculous stat line. Because it was Brandon Jacobs versus Clinton Portis. Like, that was the battle. It was the battle of the running backs, baby. CP beat Brandon Jacobs. Caught myself.
Really disappointed because I could not find the game you were talking about, and I was really excited for you to say Brandon Jacobs' name or initials. Here's my last stat from that game from earlier this year. On those 46 passes, that is good for a 2.7 average per pass attempt from Ben Roethlisberger. That is like a horrendous running game. Do you know how hard it is to average less than 3 yards per pass?
I found it.
Hit me.
Sorry.
No, hit me. That's all.
Once I saw the quarterback, I remembered this is why it was so great. It was Eli Manning who went 18 for 53 for 184 yards and a touchdown.
What? Was that game played in a hurricane?
And Washington football team legend, Kansas City Chiefs legend, Todd Collins was 8 for 25, 166 yards. Football, baby.
Back when
it meant something.
Also, to correct a mistake from 40 minutes ago, Marcus Brady, the Colts offensive coordinator, is black. I think it's funnier if we don't give any context to that. And that you just have to be listening to the show for that last 45 minutes for that mistake to have made sense. Mm-hmm. Or for you to know what it is now. Rudy just told me to, I believe you said, break it up.
Break it up.
Because we have run very long this segment.
Very long. I'm partially to blame for that.
Of course you are. It's a team effort around here. You got to be better. I got to be better.
Eli Manning needs to be a little bit better.
Ben Roethlisberger needs to be better.
Todd Collins.
Craig's phone.
Baker Mayfield. But hey, good news if you're Baker Mayfield, you got the vaunted, Baker's our guy. Anytime you get the
words. You love a vote of confidence.
The vote of confidence. Oh. It's never gone poorly.
David Coley probably got a vote of confidence about a week ago.
Joe Judge was literally told, hey, man, we believe in what you're building here. Don't worry about the rest of the season. There's nothing you can do in the last like three games that's going to get you fired. He said, hold my beer. And ran a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9.
That is a hold my meth moment.
Yes.
Like
he was told, he was told that, hey, don't worry, your job is safe.
Yeah,
we're
got
not
you,
basing
baby.
You off wins and losses. And he said, watch this.
Sounds like the Giants were a poor judge of a head coach. Let's break it up here. Let's break it up, Rudy.
Break it up.
Let's go ahead and break this one up. Merely talking about Joe Judge has put me in a despondent state because I can't believe that he was almost a head coach for another year of the NFL.
Then he ran a quarterback sneak. Like, there are moments where you watch the coach get fired. Vic Fangio got fired whenever they kicked the field goal down 4, like 5 minutes left. He might have been fired regardless, but like, you know, like that was the moment.
I just had a thought, Rudy, and then I know we got to break it up.
Break it
we
up.
We can do two segments this hour if that makes it easier for you.
Yeah, that's fine either way.
You did say earlier that Joe Judge, like, not having a coordinator thing is probably going to make him hard to get another head coaching job again. Also, mm-hmm. such an abject failure.
Yeah.
I think Todd Haley may need a rival. Joe Judge, USFL head coach.
There are four teams wide open. Four teams do not have jobs.
Four teams don't have coaches
yet. Oh, my God.
Yet.
Joe Judge is going to coach in the USFL.
Joe Judge is a perfect USFL head coach.
I mean, think about it. He is testing out new alternative methods, right? What a better place than to try out your quarterback sneak every play offense.
And he might be good
there.
Other
than in the USFL.
I feel like it might work. I don't know why.
It's like you try things out at lower levels, see if it works. It's like the high school football coach who never punts. Now he's at D3.
Yeah.
Eventually that
I think
just,
he got fired.
Yeah.
I did think he did got fired. Happen?
Well, you know. Yeah, we took a knock, but hey, this is how it works, right? Next thing you know, a coach like that's going to be Division 2. And we're just going to build our way up. Next thing you know, in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes will never have to step off the field again because punting will be illegal.
And punishable by death. No more punts ever. Rudy, it is, let me check. It's eight. Just turned 8:41 p.m. Central Standard Time. Do we need to take a break?
Well, let's break it up.
Let's break it up.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
But that's not where this show makes its money. You guys know that. We make our money talking about the Chiefs. And dunking on people on Twitter.
On Sports Radio 810. WHB.
I gotta call somebody out. Hold on, I'm gonna find it. Should have found it during the break. Found it again. Iced Pyro on Twitch. Said we are never gonna get that running back by committee audio, are we? Hey, Iced Pyro. Don't tune out. Now, look. Were we going to get to it today before that comment reminded me of its existence?
90 seconds.
What?
I was making like a joke, like we have 90 seconds left in the 90 seconds left in the segment.
We should take a break.
Yeah.
We gotta break it up.
It was a joke.
We are doing two segments here, right?
Yep.
Great.
Got about 7 minutes.
Ice Pyro, did you hear about, I don't know who that guy is. His name sounds vaguely familiar.
Joe Mangaiolo.
I don't think that's how. I think it's Manganiello. Manganiello, but I don't know who that is.
Mangaiolo.
Name sounds familiar. I can't place
Mangaiolo.
If they're a horrible person, I don't know who they are. If they're a great person,
we're best
friends.
Is that the mattress dude down in Houston? I just assume every person who places a big bet is
I don't know. Well, it wasn't that big of a bet, though. This is the thing.
Well,
he placed a bet the Steelers would win and the Jaguars would win and the Raiders and Chargers would tie. He put $200 on it and it would have paid out $34 million.
every time the so there's a crazy bet, I just assume it's that Mattress King down in Houston.
Yeah, but he put like $1 million on three different things.
That's fair.
He likes to give money away.
He's the Mattress
Don't
King.
Make me forget to play this audio, Rudy. See what you're doing? Human Torch on Twitch also has said this is their favorite bit, is that we tease audio and then never get to it. Well, Ice Pyro said yesterday, we're never going to get, or said earlier, that the audio I teased yesterday, Joe Manganiello is an actor. That makes sense. It sounds vaguely familiar. So
from
we're never going to get.
Maybe?
Huh?
From Houston, maybe?
I don't know.
Specializes in commercials?
Just Google it.
Maybe furniture commercials? Maybe furniture that you sleep on? Maybe he's the Mattress King?
Really pisses me off that I've got to get the actual answer to this question before the bit will. I don't even know if it will die. His professional film career began when he played Flash Thompson in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Appears to have abs by the first few pictures that pop up on Google Images.
Yeah, I remember that dude. Peter Parker beat him up.
He's an actor.
Yeah.
I don't recognize him. He's done a bunch of superhero stuff. Justice League, you know, also True Blood, Magic Mike, XXL. His name was Bit. I can't read that.
I do. I remember the character in Spider-Man because I watched it not that long ago.
Right, like a week ago. Yeah.
So I know what he looked like back in like 2000 or 99.
You guys are not going to get me to talk about Spider-Man. I'm pointing at Rudy and the Twitch computer. Neither one of you. Because I did forget about this audio, and then Ice Pyro kindly reminded me of it. It wasn't his bed, it was a friend of his. Ice Pyro really doing a good job producing the show today. We gotta appreciate that. I was gonna say we gotta get you paid, but I can't. But I appreciate it.
Still trying to get me paid first.
That's right. Rudy beat up Charlie Carlin left the building one day. Rudy jumped him from the bushes, took his key fob, and he's just been working here for free ever since.
Took it off his dead corpse.
I was going to say from the plague, but again, that joke was way funnier 4 years ago when there wasn't an active plague. Stop keeping me from playing this audio, me!
We're running out of time.
Andy Reid yesterday was asked about what they would do with the running back position. Now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a limited participant yesterday. He was a non-participant today. Bad sign. Seems unlikely that he'll go. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams, limited both days. But Andy Reid was asked if they'd take more of a running back by committee approach if they do get everyone fully healthy and ready to go during these playoffs. Here's what Andy Reid said to that.
Well, we've kind of done that throughout here. Just roll guys in and everybody's had their little role with the offense and so we'll keep doing that. We try to keep guys fresh and the best you possibly can, you know, against a really good defense. So it won't be any different than during the season where we did that.
Ha! Hmm. Yeah? Is that right? Here's the thing. A normal, well-adjusted human being with a variety of interests and passions.
Working livers.
Pancreases. Functional internal organs. That person would let this go. That person would not still be genuinely bothered by that audio. I am not that man. I am not that man.
I mean, it's not like the Chiefs have ever drafted a running back in the first round, Josh.
They have
two undrafted running backs on the roster.
Yeah.
And then a Deebo Samuel, a wide receiver who they let take snaps from back there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is obviously, I mean, it's not Deebo Samuel, it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but he is a wide receiver by trade who just gets some snaps in the backfield.
I am not that well adjusted.
I want a Deebo Samuel, by the way.
I wouldn't mind that. I would take a Deebo Samuel.
It'd be one of the few times I would almost be happy to run the football. Just like, yeah,
sure.
Just
something weird,
go.
At least.
Let that guy run.
Part of this has genuinely made me sad over the last couple of years during all the running back discourse. I grew up loving running backs.
I mean, we had literally, we grew up on Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson. We watched
Jamal Charles.
And then Jamal Charles. Like
we greatness.
Had about a decade of just some of the best running backs in the NFL.
And for a while, one of the only, at least the only consistent thing you could hang your hat on as a Chiefs fan over the course of a decade there. And then even before our time, you had incredible backs before that, that if we would literally run out the rest of the hour if we just started listing off great running backs the team has had.
Mark Stoudt, Jerry Nightmare. I've actually run out of them.
This has been, I genuinely have always loved watching running backs. It is a wonderful position to play from the backyard to high school ball to Madden, whatever. And the only thing, if I wish I would have been able to have a time machine to that audio clip before that draft. Because this was always the tremendously most likely scenario for how the Chiefs offense would work, where they would spend a first round pick on a part-time player. And that part-time player would not significantly move the needle amongst the other guys that would be his peers. I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think he is a good, interesting football player. He's obviously had bad injury luck, and that's not a part of my equation here. I mean, it could be a part of the equation on the positional group, but not for Clyde in particular. He's had some bad luck injuries and awkward falls and stuff. That's not his fault. But it just genuinely kind of bums me out that we have arrived at this place where Andy Reid says the most obvious thing, both about how they will use their running backs from this point forward, how they have used their running backs, how they used it before Clyde Edwards-Helaire was in town. Damian Williams was almost the Super Bowl MVP.
Should have been.
He was a cast-off. The league has repeated these processes over and over again. I think if Jerick McKinnon would have gotten a ton of work this year, he probably would have had a pretty impressive stat line. And the Chiefs have been really good at finding those guys. You know, I don't know. I don't want to do draft value leading up to a playoff game, but it was just one of those things that caught my ear and then made steam come out of it because I was supposed to be the crazy one during that conversation. And Andy Reid knows. The Chiefs know what they're doing now. It just took him longer to get here than I thought it would. Matt Verderam, next.